The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Standing against intolerable acts. Mojo 5-0. With great mojo comes great responsibility. Mojo 5-0. Mojo 5-0.
We will make America great again.
Sam Sorbo.
Welcome to the Sam Sorbo Show. Thanks so much for joining me to get this year started off right. I thought it would be fun to replay, or to play for the first time, really, some second halves of some interviews that I conducted for sorbos.locals.com. And so I hope you enjoy the show. If you really like this show, you can support the work I do over at sorbos.locals.com, or you can go to sorbostudios.com to make a donation to the film work that my husband, Kevin, and I are pursuing. And you can always go check out my books and posters and things at samsorbo.com. Thanks so much for listening. Hope you enjoy the show. Welcome back to the Sam Sorbo Show here on Locals, sorbos.locals.com. I'm still talking with Dr. Joel Hirshhorn, and we're talking about Fauci and his track record. And as the basically the mastermind of the U.S. response to COVID, which right. Let me ask you this before you get into that data that you wanted to talk about. Statistically speaking, we are the wealthiest nation in the world and we have the highest death rate from COVID. Yes, is that terrible. Not true?
Terrible. It's terrible. And by the way, we have wonderful new research from Harvard. They went and looked at nations across the globe. What did they find? The more vaccination, the more use of these vaccines, the worse the statistics. Okay.
Now define that. Sorry. Put that into perspective. What does that mean? The worse the statistics. That's.
It means more fatalities, more hospitalizations, more problems with COVID, the greater the level of vaccination in the country. So the countries that have not gone nuts like we have over vaccination do better. And by the way, I'll give you three countries that have extremely low rates of vaccination. When I say low, I mean less than 10%. And they basically have started to eliminate COVID. And the first one is India.
India. In fact, there's a state in India with a high population. I don't remember exactly.
240 million.
240 million people.
Yes.
Through the use of, I believe it was hydroxychloroquine over there, right?
Ivermectin.
Oh, sorry. Ivermectin. I get them confused. And they've claimed that they've eradicated COVID.
It's over. It's over in that state. And by the way, there are three or four or five other states that picked up also on the ivermectin. Their statistics have gone down. And what's the second country? I've seen the same data from Indonesia. They start to use ivermectin. All the data about COVID drops down. And
why didn't they get the vaccine? Was it a money thing?
Third world countries, you know, have had trouble getting the vaccine, interestingly enough.
That seems odd to me, you know, because in the interest of world health, you would think that the big pharma would donate the vaccines. And honestly, in their own interest, right?
No, they haven't done that. It's all about making money. And by the way, the third country, just to be clear, it's an amazing situation. All of a sudden, Japan government said, why don't we start using ivermectin? Bang, their numbers go down. So three countries and some other countries in Latin America.
What do we know about China?
We don't have any good data coming out.
Because we don't have good data, yeah.
No,
it's hard to know. But they stopped lockdowns pretty quickly.
Yeah, they did. But we don't know what the truth is about.
Of course, the whole country's in lockdown. So
yeah.
On 24/7, so who am I?
To go back to what Fauci did.
Yes.
I'll tell you something that's truly amazing, has not been published openly. CDC changed the way death certificates are filled out.
Yes.
So by changing the procedure for death certificates, and this was done in March of 2020, There had been a procedure that had been used for 17 years previous to this date, okay? And then somebody looked at, well, how many people were declared COVID deaths with the new procedure? Well, it was an enormous number, as we now have seen, right? They went back and looked, what if we had used the procedure for 17 years, okay, before the COVID change? It was less than 10,000. So just changing the procedure for how death certificates were filled out was a monumental change hidden from the public, okay? There's so much data that's hidden from the public. I just did a study.
Hold on, sorry, because I just need to make sure for clarification. So what you're saying is, when did the CDC make the change on the way deaths were reported?
March 24th, 2020.
So in 2020, during the pandemic, the CDC...
Early on in the pandemic, the CDC
said, we're going to change the way that we report deaths so that we do what? We remark that it was attributed to COVID?
Make it easy for a coroner or a doctor to blame COVID for a death.
So basically, they put COVID on the certificate and said, check this box if it's COVID. And by the way, we pay more if it's COVID.
There was a financial incentive, as you know, for hospitals to make that declaration that it was a COVID death.
And by the way, just to be very clear here, you are not allowed to open to anybody who isn't COVID. So you better make sure that you're only treating COVID patients.
Right.
And if they die, and by the way, we'll incentivize you to only treat COVID patients, but you're going to have to shut down half your hospital to do this. So you'll be financially strapped, but we'll compensate you on the back end. And if they die of COVID, you'll get further compensation.
Absolutely true.
And people think that somehow this pandemic thing is a setup. I don't get it.
You know, I must say, I'm not a conspiracy nut. The more I've looked into this, the more I've realized, again, going back to Fauci's congressional hearing testimony on March 11th, 2020, it was what they call a pandemic. It was crazy.
So let's talk about conspiracies for just a minute. What is the definition of a conspiracy that in your mind? How do you define conspiracy?
Well, a sort of widely held belief that something very corrupt and evil is going on intentionally.
No, that's what we think when we say conspiracy theorists, right? We think that the individual is like paranoid that there's some high level.
Yes.
Right. But is a conspiracy? A conspiracy is simply two or more people getting together to plan something behind the scenes.
So here is the conspiracy that's true. It is Fauci, NIH, CDC, and FDA plus mainstream media. That's the conspiracy that pushed this pandemic the way the government responded to it, defined it basically. And we have all these brilliant doctors, people that I'm associated with, who said from the very beginning, the whole pandemic strategy should only have been focused on those with potentially a high fatality rate, which would have been about age 70 and over. If we would have just focused the government response on those elderly people and not go to lockdowns or masking or any shutdowns, school closings, none of that was necessary. And today, nobody should be getting vaccines. And I have some wonderful data that I've done recently in an article, why these vaccines are not even working. That's the crazy thing. We now know from much data from all over the world that after about 4 to 5 months, 6 months at worst, these vaccines stop being effective. And by the way, they're only effective for the original Alpha variant, okay? They're not even effective for the Delta variant. So not only are the vaccines not working, and how do we know they're not working, by the way? Colin Powell just died. Why did Colin Powell die? He had what we call a breakthrough infection. He was fully vaccinated. And I want to tell you about a study. The website was taken down almost immediately. A Department of Defense study. Why did the Department of Defense do a study? Well, there were some people, obviously, who wanted to get good data. And let me tell you what they did. They got a hold of all the medical records of 5.6 million people in Medicare. Medicare, 65 and older, 5.6 million people fully vaccinated. And they got this data, and this is why the website was taken down. What did they discover for this sample, which is only, by the way, 10% of all the Medicare people, but these are fully vaccinated, 65 and older.
So well, 10% of all the Medicare people is still a lot of people. That's a large study.
5.6 million people.
Right.
How many people got breakthrough cases fully vaccinated?
Tell me.
Documented breakthrough cases, okay?
Yeah.
161,000. How many people went to the hospital? 33,000. How many people went to intensive care units? Over 10,000. Now, the big kicker, the bottom line, why this data was taken down, how many people died from breakthrough infections? I always think in my mind, 9/11, what was the big news on the 9/11 catastrophe? How many people died? I've given this question to audiences when I give talks. Everyone knows 3,000 people died in 9/11. How many people died in this Department of Defense study, fully vaccinated people? 3,381. Over 3,300 people died in this sample from breakthrough infections. Why? Because these vaccines become ineffective. So
Hold on. I'm following you. We're running out of time and I want to get this in. So the vaccines become ineffective. You're saying at 6 months, I've heard at 11 months, they don't really know how quickly it trails off, but it looks like 5% each month roughly. And they don't know if it'll stop trailing off and it'll remain, 30% effective or 40% effective, or if it's just ineffective. And then there are other people, I'm sure you're among those people who say it's worse than ineffective. It actually stops the body's immune response to COVID once the efficacy of the vaccine wears off. And so then you have basically no protection, I guess.
Right.
So I've heard that. My question is this. The DOD study, when did they conclude the study? How long had the people in the study been vaccinated? Are they going to continue the study as time moves on? Because those people's vaccines are aging, right? And so they may further people will age out of vaccine efficacy. And yes. We don't even have. My problem with all of this is I'm not a guinea pig. That's it. I'm not a guinea pig. I mean, good luck with your trials. And the other problem that I have is the trial is so large that I can't help but be swept into it. And so now I'm a part of it because I have to wear a mask to protect other people who have been vaccinated. What?
I can tell you that all the data I've seen, I'll say 6 months, your vaccine immunity is gone. Okay, now they found one other thing, by the way. There were people in this Department of Defense study, interestingly enough, they checked on this. There were people who had natural immunity. There were some people in this sample who had gotten COVID and who had gotten natural immunity. What did this study find out? Those people have the best protection against getting breakthrough infection. In fact, if you have natural immunity, you do not get breakthrough infections. You're safe. You're safe. It's only the people who get vaccine immunity and they lose their effective immunity. They're the ones getting breakthrough infections. And by the way, I'm going to tell you, this is my prediction. Colin Powell is just the tip of the iceberg. Every day more, and I hear it on TV all the time, relatively famous people are getting breakthrough infections.
Right. What about the people who say they're getting breakthrough infections because you didn't get vaccinated?
No, it's not true.
We know that. My concern is, look, they're looking to vaccinate. You know what? We've run out of time, and this is such a long conversation. But you've traced it back to Fauci. It does seem like it's a conspiracy. A conspiracy is two or more people who conspire to defraud others.
Yes.
So the question is, did Fauci do this for the money or for personal gain somehow or for something else? Is Francis Collins involved?
Yes.
And Yeah, you know, that remains to be seen, but I have a feeling that we will have somebody who can almost be said to be, well, probably not rise to the level of Hitler, but he's an evil player, I think. And
absolutely.
Yeah, everything that's coming out now is outrageous. All right. Joel Hirshhorn, Dr. Joel Hirshhorn, thank you so much for coming on the program. This is the Sam Sorbo Show. We've got to leave it there. This is the Sam Sorbo Show here on sorbos.locals.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. The second part of this interview with Kate Daly, who single-handedly saved her husband's life from the medical community.
With the frontline doctors.
All right. So she had backup from the front line. I don't know how that works, but you managed it. I've heard several different versions of this story, frankly, at this point. And it's very sad. I had a friend call me because we had a friend who was in the hospital. She refused to get vaccinated and she went into the hospital with COVID and he was very worried for her. And he was saying, you know, everybody needs to get vaccinated, but I support people who choose not to get vaccinated. You know, I know that there are people who firmly believe that their children have been harmed by vaccines. And I believe in freedom. And the idea that you go into a hospital and somehow surrender your freedoms is quite frightening to me. And I worked in a hospital for many years. I volunteered and I helped people express themselves. I remember I had somebody come into the hospital with her mother, and her mother was diabetic. And she came in like a fireball. She was already angry before she walked through the door. And she said, "You are not taking my mother without me. I must be there. The last time we were here and they took her without me and they double dosed her on her insulin and it was a disaster and you're not going to do this." And I just looked at her and I said, "You're right." And she was ready to argue. She's like, you can't tell. Wait, what? And I said, "No,
you're surprised.
Yeah, you're right. I totally understand you. I will take care of this for you." And she almost burst into tears. I mean, she was she was still suspicious of me. She's like, "Why are you telling me you're going to help me? You know, I know better," kind of thing. But there are, the hospitals have protocols. I get that because they're a big institution and they have to run with protocols because how can they help that many people if everybody is just an individual? I get it. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, everybody is just an individual, and some individuals can't comply with the standard, whatever the standard line is.
The only thing I have a problem with is when they're saying it's safe and effective, that remdesivir was chosen at the end of January, before COVID was even a thing. It was still a mystery. And he chose those from the Ebola study, and it failed the Ebola study, and it never actually excelled in any study. So when they say safe and effective, I'm hoping that more doctors will look at the studies, look at the one study it was in before they recommend it as safe and effective, because I don't think people know about the chance they're taking when they do that.
Well, I mean, part of the problem now is the medical community has completely, well, maybe not completely, because a lot of people just aren't paying attention, or they're not getting, they're only getting their news from CBS or what have you, right?
Right.
But to a large degree, for maybe, you know, more than a quarter of the country, the medical community itself is now suspect, because Fauci is suspect. And some of the things he's said are lies. And we know that. And, you know, and I'm going back, I can go back to when he said masks won't do you any good, but he did it because of the common good, because he wanted to preserve the N95 masks for only the medical personnel. Well, I'm sorry. Then say that.
Right.
Don't lie. Because what they're saying is, no, he lied back then. Well, is he telling the truth now? Because now he has zero credibility. And that was just that little tiny thing. When you add in the remdesivir, and the remdesivir that failed clinical trials, they actually removed it from the clinical trial because it was too deadly.
Right.
Now they're prescribing it.
Yep,
I'm sorry.
Exactly.
That's a huge problem for me.
It should be. It should be for everybody. And I agree with you. It is. And I just hope people do a little bit more homework, because it's so easily treatable. They can do it from home and they can nip it in the bud right away within the first few days. And it's not hard to do. And the drugs that do work have been on the market for 60 and 80 years, and they're safe.
So, they have proven track records.
Yeah.
It's true. So. Crazy. Okay. So let's talk about this. The leaked email. This is on Twitter. So who knows? But this is how I get my news now.
Right,
sorry.
Right.
I don't trust anything, but when yeah. it's against the establishment, I tend to trust it more. Email from last fall shows that Waltz is the governor of Minnesota. The chief of staff for him was scheming with Malcolm to find ways to better sell COVID fear because the numbers were too small. Jan tells the staff to get, quote, creative. And then 2 weeks later, the governor paused sports and he shut down the schools.
Why does this not shock me anymore? Do you know how many tales like this we have heard now as far as real stories that are coming out? It's kind of like, it reminds me of the Biden mandate, although 100 or more in a company was never written down. It was in a press conference. But what they did was they took the mandate, they took the federal mandate, and the press inserted the 100 people or more at any corporation and made it into a thing. It wasn't a thing. It was a press conference. And so the lies are just coming out and they're insane. It's like the Pfizer study that we're all in a trial and they said, you know what, honestly, we're not even looking at any of the people in the trial. When the trial was happening, we didn't monitor anything. We didn't do anything. We didn't keep all the same standards. And now they're coming out and saying, we're going to give you 500 pieces of the documentation of safety over the next, 70 years, 500 documents a year. Because we don't want to have you see the whole thing at once. So everybody will be dead by the time, you know, anyone that cares about this. It's the same machine. It just keeps lying and lying. That's why when I talk about COVID and you talk about COVID, we're like, we have a stack this high of documentation that says they're lying. What do they have? Trust me, I'm the government, and trust me, I'm the media. I mean, I don't understand it. I'm like, I've got a file, you know? Oh, it's insane. And so that the lies just keep coming and coming and coming. And I always wonder how many lies we're going to have to deal with before we get a majority to wake up. I don't know. What do you think? I'm not quite sure how many lies have to be told. But.
Well, I think that's part of the problem. That's what the left banks on is right. That the lies will trickle out so slowly that people will lose count.
Right.
And in fact, I mean, I've had instances where somebody said, well, remember when Obama said this? And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's right.
Yeah,
but I forgot, I'd forgotten. Or you know, when this thing happened and that fit into the puzzle, but I'd forgotten that thing happened because it happened so long ago. So, you know, I think there's a healthy skepticism in the marketplace. I understand that the governor of Tennessee just said no more COVID restrictions. We're done with that.
Yeah.
I know that in my great state of...
I see some states leading out like Oklahoma, National Guard saying, no, we're not doing it. We're not doing it, even under the threat of the Pentagon saying, well, you have to. Well, they're saying no. And good for them because the states have rights and the states need to stand up against this. And they can. If you have a good governor, they can.
Yeah. So I'm asking my guests this now. There are a lot of people out there who are saying that this will have to end in a revolution. Mm-hmm. And it will be violent. And there are other people who are saying, no, we can still walk this back. We can still figure this out. Where do you fall on that spectrum?
What I say is, look, we already fought a bloody revolution. We fought a bloody revolution. It was done. We have the Constitution now. And when we have the Constitution now, that means we can work in it. We can find judges that are not corrupt. We can find a system that can work because it was already done. So let's take that and say, we have this already. People fought and died for that Constitution. Now it's up to us to stand up, and we're going to have to be inconvenienced, and we're going to have to sacrifice. We're not sure what that looks like in our generation because we're not used to it. But what we're going to have to do is sacrifice. And if that means walking away from a job, not walk away, get fired, so you have a case. But be inconvenienced a little bit, right? Because the founders gave it all. They put it all on the line. We're not ready to do that yet. Why not? How much freedom has to be taken until we're ready to do that? But I actually don't think it needs to go violent. I think that you can fight this with the Constitution that they inserted, that they made readily available for us if we fight for that Constitution and understand it. But people don't understand it. They don't study it. They don't know what to think of it. They think it's a document for another time. But these are principles. It was based on principles that stand the test of time. So we can use that document for sure. Absolutely.
Well, we have to understand what's in the document. We're not taught. We're not even taught how to read the document. In fact, my understanding, I just saw this video, and it's an older video, so I haven't had a chance to really research, but there's a program online that you can insert some text, and it will tell you at what grade level the reading of that text is, right? So it's written at a certain grade level. And there was a letter that went out from Glenn Beck years ago that said, we need, I think it was Glenn Beck, to everybody at the Blaze, yeah, that we're writing to an eighth grade level. Like people don't read beyond an eighth grade level. Sure, there are some people, but most people don't, you know. So and it's, I believe it's lower now. And so I think Trump spoke at like a fifth grade level or something. And that's him serving the population, right? That's not his level of intelligence. That's him, how he communicates to the, you know, average Joe kind of thing. No pun intended. Anyway, he put the first sentence of the Declaration of Independence into this program to see at what grade level it was written. And I believe it was 23 and a half. The grade level of the Declaration of Independence is roughly 23 and a half. That means 23 and a half years of schooling. That's beyond college. That's right. And if you look at Washington's, I think you put in Washington's farewell address, it was written at a grade level of like 19.
Sure.
So you've got K through 12. Then you've got 4 years of college. That's 16. 3 years more of study these days.
Right.
And that's how our education system has gone through basically educational inflation.
Yeah. It's so pathetic. I wish people would take their kids out of school.
So
if
here's
I had to
the
do
thing.
It all over again, I would have.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Like, if you can't read the Declaration of Independence, if you can't read the Constitution, it has no value.
You're right.
That's the problem. The other problem that we face, Kate, is that our government is now made up of people who hate those documents.
Yes. Yeah, I know. They
who despise them. So I'm not sure that I'm hoping that you're right, but my foot is kind of in the other camp. That's just what I believe, and I don't know how it's going to happen. Obviously,
I don't know. I think that there's going to be a lot of people that stay in larger cities that believe in the same way, kind of like going into a little tribes. I think a lot of people.
Yes,
are
the states.
Out.
It's going to be the states against the federal government.
Yep.
But I will say this: it's kind of a silly conversation. We're already there.
Yeah.
There is already a revolution that's happening. There is an attack that is happening on the United States of America currently.
Yes.
And it's not COVID. COVID was the excuse.
Yeah. COVID was planned a long time ago, actually. A long time ago to come to this.
So we need people to wake up, and I'm taking steps. I'm doing somewhat my part. I haven't gotten thoroughly engaged, but I mean, I'm sitting here chatting with you and encouraging other people to be engaged and to be connected. And I invite people to connect with me on LinkedIn, although LinkedIn is compromised. But here on Locals, it's not compromised. We need more people on Locals, and we need more people to reach out to you. I'm sure that there's a way to contact you on your website.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Kate Daly.
KateDalyRadio.com. And we have, 8,000 hours of training, of learning, all the things you were just talking about with the Constitution. We take bits and pieces of the Constitution and go over them thoroughly in detail. This is what is so important right now. I've made it a mission, like you have, to educate and teach, because we're not learning our true history. We don't understand it. It's been altered a lot. We don't understand how wonderful this country is and how great it is. And
that's
our
right.
Kids are not learning that message. And so we have a lot of work to do, because when you can educate the masses, then the masses will stand up against it. And unless we can do that, we don't stand a chance unless people are educated in what they need to be educated in to fight. You're a lot more confident in the fight when you know what you're talking about, right?
You know
that. Yeah.
I will say this, just to finish this up,
sure.
Because you're right. If you're not educated in what you're fighting for, then you're not going to fight for it.
Right.
However, my understanding is that it was a very small minority of patriots who fought for the independence and who engaged in the fight. And then their recruitment efforts, of course, grew their ranks. But most people in the United States at the time, in colonial America, I should say, were against the revolution.
They were Tories. Yeah.
There were Tories. Right. They supported the king. The king is the way it's been. He's a good king. He stepped over the line. Just teach him a little lesson and we'll go back to the way things were. And I think I think there's a lot of that sentiment here in the United States. Well, once we get the vaccine, everything can go back to normal. No, now it's boosters. Now it's this. Now it's that.
Now it's pills. They said today, now it's pills, you know?
It oh, pills, going. Right.
And 300 shots in the works right now. 300. Are we going to become a pincushion? That's why we have to fight it. We have to fight for body autonomy. We lose that and property rights, this country's over. You're right.
My body, my choice, baby.
Oh my gosh. Where are those women? Right.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It only works. It only goes so far. It's sad. Anyway, we could talk forever. Kate Daly, thank you so much for coming on the Sam Sorbo Show, and welcome back to the Sam Sorbo Show. So my guest right now is somebody who just reached out to me on email, and you can do that at samsorbo.com. And I read them all, I have to say. Some are more interesting than others. Robin Wetzel has a PhD in educational psychology, and she's been in the field of education and mental health for the past 36 years. And she reached out to share with me some realizations that she's had about our educational system in the United States and some trouble that she's having reconciling how we educate young people and what's happening with boots on the ground to the young people who are being so-called educated. And so we were going to have a conversation about where our focuses align. But I thought it might be interesting just to bring her on the show to have this conversation so the rest of you can be privy to it. And so with that, I give you, or I welcome to the show, Robin Wetzel. Thanks so much for reaching out.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity for me to participate.
Yeah. So let's start with this idea that you gleaned a lot from your experience with education, with educating children, with child psychology, and you're noticing that the way that we educate children into conformity is different than the way we ought to be handling children, which is as individuals, right?
Very much so.
So I guess the question for you, one of my first questions is, are you coming at this from in any way, like a spiritual idea, like a Christian ideal or a Jewish ideal of the individual as sovereignly created by God?
Oh, very, very much a Christian idea. And because that's who I am. And so okay. That's never not in the background. But at this point, it's as much of a professional piece. I would say that I'd been in the field. I'd been licensed for 5 years, and somebody walked up to me, or maybe 10 years at that point. And somebody walked up to me one day and said, "How long did it take you to figure out that educational psychology was an oxymoron?" And I said, "About 5 years," because psychology is very much about the individual and the individual strengths and the individual's challenges and how can the individual best meet those. Education is about sort of turning out widgets. You know, how much can we teach people? How quickly can we teach it? What is the best mechanism for doing that teaching, et cetera? And those two things don't fit well together. And so over the years, I've spent a lot of time working with families and children. On any given school year, I move between 200 and 300 children to a school that fits them better. And over the most recent years, I have moved more families into many of the homeschool co-ops across the state to help them so the kids have peer groups, but essentially are being homeschooled. And then during COVID, I'm now flooded. I get 10 calls a week. And so when I saw you on TV, I had to reach out.
I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. You know, I do my TV show and I do get feedback, and it's always wonderful to get feedback, whether it's positive or negative, although I haven't had any negative feedback on the show, on my podcast a little bit. But it's good to know that the message is resounding a little bit, at least resonating. So first of all, what state are you in? I don't even know that.
Minnesota.
Oh, you're in Minnesota, which is where my husband's from. And Minnesota schools are troubled, right?
They have been for at least the 30 years that I was, once I became a PhD, which was a little over 30 years ago, I started really tracking what was going on, and they have been in trouble ever since then. And when No Child Left Behind kicked in 2001, they went about as low as you can get, and they have not recovered.
Now, define trouble, define low. Let's put some parameters on that. Something more concrete.
Minnesota it strives to be one of the top school states in the nation for education. And theoretically, its high numbers rank in the top five with New York and Massachusetts and some of those states, right? That's their goal. The problem is, in doing so, they disenfranchise somewhere between 30 and 50% of the students who do not graduate or, essentially drop out or eventually go back and get a GED. They are not successful within the high school arena. And many of those folks, when No Child Left Behind went into place, the school superintendent of the year was actually from Minnesota that year. And in chatting with him, and he was in Washington for something, and he said at that point, he said, No Child Left Behind does more I'm sorry, I don't know if you can see that. Somebody was trying to call me and I just knocked him out. Did more to disenfranchise students and will increase the number of students in attending vocational school and community college than anything else that they could have possibly
done. I'm sorry. So we're going to have to repeat that because it sort of cut out a little bit. So he, as the school superintendent, said that No Child Left Behind did more to disenfranchise students
than anything possible, and that it would increase the enrollment in GED programs, vocational training programs, and community colleges.
So it dissuades children. It dissuades children from actually pursuing higher education, from pursuing from even pursuing school. It basically takes them out of school. So then I have to ask you. The stated goal of No Child Left Behind was to make sure that children were brought up to speed with the progressive educational ideals. So every child would get up to, maybe not including calculus, but would get up to calculus in high school, linear algebra or something like trigonometry, something like that. And that's not what it did. It did the opposite of that. And I have actually said that our schools are not engaged in education. They're engaged in literally the opposite of education. Your reaction to that?
Well, I think essentially you are correct. They fail to take into account that when those little guys walk into kindergarten or first grade at the age of 5 or 6, they're not coming in from an even playing field. Some of those children come in from fairly wealthy families. They've had chances to travel. They've had every gadget you could want. Mom and dad take time to, do science experiments in the kitchen while you're baking cookies. For other families, there's not a toy in the house. Everybody's working 3 jobs in order to keep a roof. And so there's no opportunity for them to interact with their children, even if they love them dearly, and most do. And so the deal is they're not coming in as an even playing field. So you start off in Minnesota with the idea that children will get through the first 3 reading books that are in the current reading series that's being used by most schools. And so they get through level A, B, and C in kindergarten. Well, there's a huge number of children that barely get past level A because they don't know their ABCs. They can't even sing the ABC song when they arrive in kindergarten. And so no one is taking into account that these children are individuals when they arrive on day one. And, what we know very well is that it doesn't matter where you start. If we do education correctly, everybody gets better. Everybody learns. Not always at the same rate. They don't always reach the same heights, but everyone learns. But the system now is so designed to get people to point P at the end of kindergarten and point Z at the end of first grade and point double D at the end of second grade that children are failing miserably. I get reports from counselors all the time from schools across the state about kids who, you know, come in sobbing the day that the Minnesota state assessments are going on. And they cry for 3 days while they're trying to get through these tests. And eventually some of these children are exempt under special ed rules. But for other children, they are just off the charts enough that they don't qualify for any special ed, any remediation. And they're essentially tortured their way through. And the day they turn 16, they walk in and they say, I quit. They throw their books on the counselor's desk and walk out the door.
Yeah, now I've started saying that you won't learn anything that you don't choose to learn, that you cannot force anybody to learn anything. They have to choose to learn. And so in a sense, what's happened is the system has morphed to the point where it is really trying to force education on children because it needs them to perform to a certain degree. And then you get the reluctance because you're not going to tell me what to do and you can't force me to do this. And then further to that, you know, you talk about the individual, the child is an individual. Well, the system seeks conformity. So it actually dislikes the fact that the child is an individual. It eschews that. It doesn't want that. And so I think that's part of the problem. Robin, I'm going to have to leave it here. This has been lovely to talk to you. And I want to pick up a little further down the road with you the next time we chat, because I want to know where we're going to go from here. I mean, you've been in this for quite a long time and you've seen the morph, and it's interesting to me that you've come to this realization from being inside the system. It's a tough realization to come to. I had to be outside the system for almost a decade before I really started to realize what was happening inside the schools. I thought that I just chose a better way, but in fact, I chose the way to freedom for my children, the way to their individuality. And what's happening inside the schools is the schools have chosen the path to slavery, servitude, and conformity, which is really the opposite. And so what I do is I define that as the opposite of education, in a sense. What do you say to that before we end it?
When you were saying that, you know, that slavery, conformity, all of that, I would say 100% right on, my dear. You've got it down. Because that's at least now I will put a caveat here. Other states are not as rigid as Minnesota is. If you go to South Dakota, if you go to Ohio, if you go to Nebraska. So I don't.
Yes, but now they've got Common Core. Common Core seeks the conformity across all the states. So we're losing the idea that each state is its own petri dish and can experiment and try to figure out best practices.
There are 13 states that rejected Common Core, and on a different time to interact, I'll give you that list if you would like, or I'll send it to you in advance.
Yeah, the problem that I have with that is that all the textbooks adopted it. So you're going to look very hard to find a school that isn't already infected with Common Core.
That, to some extent, that is true.
And all the teachers.
Almost everybody.
All the teachers are coming from the
institution. And you don't want to get me started on what I think about Pearson.
Right. And all the teachers are coming from the institutions. So they've all been taught the CRT stuff, and the 1619 is coming through, and like they've all come out of that. Now, some of them are rejecting it. That's great. However, you know, there's a big battle. So this is great. Yeah, I've got to leave it here. But Robin Wetzel, where can people go to find you?
My direct email, I'll have to spell it for you. It's I.
All right. You know what? That's fine. I'll get it. We'll get it offline and I'll put it in the link. So you go to samsorbo.com for the podcast, or go to anywhere where you download the podcast, and it'll be in the link. And that's great. Robin Wetzel, thank you so much for coming on the Sam Sorbo Show. All right. Welcome back to the Sam Sorbo Show here on sorbos.locals.com. My guest is Todd Shoemaker, Todd O.C. Shoemaker. He's the focus of the new documentary Dead Man Running, which tells his 17-year perilous journey through medical diagnoses that tended to prove wrong, although they weren't entirely wrong. Prognoses were wrong. Diagnoses right. were correct. Let's right. put it that way.
Yeah.
And as confusing as that is, you'll just have to bear with me while we talk to Todd. So In this second part of the interview, I said I wanted to talk about this more of the spiritual implications. And one thing that I'm really struggling to understand from you, because I'm very curious about different people's experience. I hear God also, but mm-hmm. but it's not like it's that I wake up in the morning early, typically with an idea. It's just boom. It's like out of whole cloth, God downloads into my brain this idea. And that's the only way that I can explain it, because it doesn't come. I can tell that it's not me. It's not like, wow, I just had this fabulous idea right before I woke up. My brain is so amazing. Like, I just don't, that doesn't work yeah. for me. So it's a download. You say God would wake you up at 1 o'clock in the morning. And I think God understands me well enough to know that I'm pretty cranky at 1 o'clock in the morning. Not the best time to engage me in conversation.
Yeah.
He wakes you up at 1 o'clock in the morning, and then what?
Well, I just have to say, when I was dealing with Parkinson's patients either sleep a lot or you don't sleep at all. So for the last 15 years, I only sleep. And even up to this point, I'm still only sleeping like 2 hours a night. So usually I'm pretty much up by 1 o'clock. So that's kind of a good time for him and I to have discussions, because I'm up and ready to go.
Oh, that's your wakey time. You're just up, ready to go.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
But yeah, with speaking, like, I never hear the audible voice of God. Like, I never hear this big booming voice or anything. It's just, I hear him speaking to my spirit and sharing things. And then a lot of times it's me, especially during that season of being sick. It was just me crying out and saying, God, I need you to get through. But you know, we have conversations, like he'll ask a question in my spirit, I'll feel like he's asking me a question, you know, like, you know, really, how is your marriage? Really, how is your relationships with others? Really, how are you dealing with all that's going on? Because I mean, there's a lot of people out there who are just like, well, maybe you just weren't really sick. And I'm like, well, I kind of have the scars from the surgeries and everything else to kind of prove.
You know, I'll be honest. Part of it, the idea that you needed to become a runner, and you weren't a runner before then, right?
I ran in high school a little bit, but hadn't run in years.
Right. So, right. So God said, you need to start running. You need to run marathons. You need to become a runner. Mm-hmm. The idea that you needed to become a runner lends credibility to the illness, right? Mm-hmm. If you had been a couch potato and then you're like, oh, I'm sick and I can't get off the couch now, people would be like, well, yeah, but that's you sort of, whether you're sick or not, that's your MO. Like, that's, you brought that on yourself and that's your MO. Yeah. And by the way, I'm not disparaging couch potatoes. That's not what this is about. I'm just drawing this kind of comparison that you were called to run as a way of testimony to what then you were going through. So paint me a quick picture. You wake up at 1 o'clock in the morning. Do you get out of bed and go make yourself a cup of coffee and have your God time with your Bible? Or are you still lying in bed and you're just sort of feeling a voice talk to you? Or how does it work?
Well,
and Todd, you know, walk us through this, because there are a lot of people out there who would love to have that relationship. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And the way for them to get that relationship is to pursue it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so go ahead.
Yeah. For me, like, I've slept in a recliner for the last 15 years. Like, I can't sleep in a bed. Like, my body just isn't comfortable. So I'm in a recliner. You know, I always have my Bible right there with me, my journal to journal. If I need to share something, you know, if God's downloading something, you know, and he's like, write it down. But I would just encourage people, find what time works for you. You know, we get caught up with, oh, I got to do it in the morning, got to do it in the afternoon, got to do it in the evening. Whenever you feel like God's calling you to have that time, like, yeah, you should start the day off with prayer and thanksgiving. But if you're not a morning person and your quiet time is just kind of like, hey, I had to check it off the list, change it to nighttime if that's your time. Change it to your lunch hour if that's better for you. Just don't get caught up with, well, I have to do it a certain time because that's what somebody told me years ago when I became a Christian, that you got to do it all in the morning.
And let me add into that a little bit of, we learn in school that we have boxes that we have to check. And we learn that there's a schedule for things. And so I want to encourage people that if you pursue something, you can achieve it, but you have to purpose it. And we aren't really taught in school how to purpose things. We're taught to do homework. We're taught to jump through other people's hoops.
Right.
And so I would encourage people, you don't have to pick a time right now. You can simply purpose to find that relationship. And then you try it on, and you try it on in the morning. You get up in the morning, you set your alarm 15 minutes early, and wake up and lie in bed and think about, how am I going to see if I can engage in a conversation with God today?
Right.
So you purpose it for that day, and maybe it'll come to you at lunch. Maybe it'll come to you on the drive home.
Right.
Maybe, right? But if you don't purpose it, the pursuit, God is pursuing everybody.
Yes.
But he's a gentleman. He's not pounding on doors. And so you have to start with being receptive. And the only way to be receptive is to recognize that there might be somebody at the door, and maybe go and open it, look out the front window and say, hey, are you around? You know,
right.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. I mean, I think we just get caught up with kind of the way we were raised to do things. And so many people are like, oh, you know, I mean, I know when I became a Christian, everybody said, you have to do your quiet time in the morning. Well, for me, it wasn't any big deal because I'm a morning person. So, but for my wife, I mean, she needs to kind of wake up and she needs to have her coffee and she needs to, you know,
she's
she
like,
kind of needs,
get
she needs
that
to
Bible
move around,
out of my face, you know, first thing in the morning. I haven't even done my makeup yet.
Right. You know, she kind of needs to get awake. You know, for me, I literally wake up ready to go. Like,
that's me too. And you know, it's not even me waking up. It's God tapping me on the shoulder. Hey, wake up. This idea. Check this out, you know.
You know, and don't get caught up with, like, you have to have like a certain spot that you do things. Like for me, God speaks to me more when I'm running than any other time.
You know,
we have those morning conversations at 1 o'clock, but like with the, you know, because my wife and I had written a book that came out in 2019. Basically, it was my story and then her sharing her story as a caregiver. And basically it was basically my goodbye, because at that point, you know, things weren't looking great. So I thought, well, you know, and God told me to write a book. So I wrote the book. But with that, it wasn't with the book, it was just to try to share like the care, you know, from the caregiver's perspective. But when we started the documentary, I was like, I don't really feel like that's what we should call the documentary, the book title. And I said, well, I'm just going to go running. And when I was running, God said, call it Dead Man Running. And I thought, well, God, why do you want me to call it that? And he said, well, one, you were basically a dead man for many years in the eyes of your medical team and in the world. Two, runners are going to see running in it. So runners are going to come thinking it's a running movie, and they're going to come to know me. Young people are going to think, oh, it's a zombie movie, Dead Man Running. they're going to come thinking they're going to see a zombie, but who they're going to see is me, and they're going to walk away knowing me. So that's kind of how I came up with the title.
Well, there's also Dead Man Walking, right? So
there is Dead Man Walking. Yes. So,
but it is a great title, because it definitely has that connotation that you've been given a death sentence.
Yeah.
And the poster's fabulous. I got to say, like, the artwork is great. I'm excited for the movie.
Yeah.
Are you running currently?
I am. I didn't run this morning. I did run yesterday. I try to run like every other day now.
And how far do you run when you run?
That kind of depends on God. He kind of tells me when to stop. But usually these days he's telling me to stop at around 4 to 6 miles.
I run a mile.
Well, praise God. That's awesome.
And I'm not, and I haven't been diagnosed with anything. I'm kind of pathetic.
No. You know what? You're getting out there and you're doing it. It's like the people that say, oh, I only walk. Well, God bless you. You're getting out there. You're not sitting on the couch. You know, you're doing something active. So for me, you know, I'm a person that believes whether you're running, walking, going to the gym, whatever, as long as you're taking care of yourself. Because for me, my doctors shared, you know, because of being a runner, I was in such great shape when I got sick again in 2009,
right?
That's really, you know, medically to them, that's why I was able to handle that onslaught of those first few weeks. I mean, I know it was God, but Yeah. I'll give the doctors their credit.
Okay, last question. Because the movie is called Dead Man Running, and I know you want to appeal to people, but there are a lot of people, there are people who listen to this who aren't Christians. They don't want to be beaten over the head with a Bible. Is that what they're going to get in the movie? Or what do people who aren't necessarily Christian, what is their takeaway from the movie going to be? What, you know?
I think their takeaway from the response that we've gotten from a few people that have seen it is you're going to walk away with hope. They're going to walk away with encouragement. They're going to walk away going, hey, if this guy can do it, I obviously can do it.
So, right. Regardless, even if you don't buy into the whole God down thing.
Yeah. I mean, there's not going to be at the end, you know, it's not going to be
an altar call.
Yeah. They're not going to, you know, now maybe when I'm speaking, that might be different, but, you know, but the movie, no, anybody walking away, I think will, you know, will say, I'm full of hope. I'm full of encouragement. I'm ready to knock that challenge out.
All right. So the next thing you're going to do is run for public office, right?
No.
Then you'd really be a dead man running.
Yes, I would. Yeah, I could. I feel like, you know, God calls special people to do that. And that's not my calling. And my wife always says, praise God, you don't want to be a politician because I don't want people looking in my closet.
All right. Todd O.C. Shoemaker. Todd Shoemaker is the star of Dead Man Running. It's a new film that's opening up on YouTube on November 17th. Gather some friends around, grab a box of tissues. It is a ride to watch this movie, and I'm sure you will enjoy it no matter where you are on your spiritual path. Todd, thank you so much for making the film. Very excited.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right. That's it for me here. This is The Sam Sorbo Show. Thanks for tuning in.
This is the seditious, rabble-rousing, liberty-loving, home of fun, entertaining, and compelling talk. Mojo 5-0.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.